This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
It's a good day to put the U.S. economy up on the lift to see what's really going on under there. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. With October to December data in this morning, we can now report that the U.S. economy grew by just 1.6% last year. The fourth quarter data were weaker than expected, but at least one seasoned eye sees some promise here. On Fridays, we consult Chris Lowe, the chief economist at FTN Financial in New York. Good Friday morning to you, Chris.
Good morning, David.
So we can now tell that the fourth quarter data is in. We can tell you that all of 2016, the economy grew by just 1.6%. That's not great.
No, it undershoots the average since the Great Recession, which is about 2.25%. Last year was a rough year for production. But the good news is I think the turning point is behind us. Things are looking up in the future.
You draw a line to this result for 2016 from the great collapse in oil prices.
That's right, because what happened when oil prices fell is that investment in things like oil rigs and oil jobs, and therefore the spending of oil workers, all of that fell back in 2015. But it took a while for producers to notice the weakness in demand. And as a result, there was an inventory overbuilt. 2016 really was all about correcting that. Stripping inventories out, growth is running at about 2.5%. So looking forward, now that inventories are growing in line with the economy again, 2.5% growth is likely in 2017, even before we start fooling around with tax cuts and infrastructure spending.
But still, Chris, I'm stuck on the fourth quarter results for the end of last year here, as you go from October to December. 1.9% annualized doesn't look very good.
Remember, we had 3.5% growth in the third quarter, and it turned out a third of that was soybean exports. Not surprisingly, they came back down to earth in the fourth quarter. Take those soybeans out, and growth was 2.6%. Really pretty good.
So, all right, the soybean effect, right? But also, what happens if you take out some of the effect of inventories and a few other things?
Yeah, take out trade and inventories. These are the really volatile components. And 2.6% growth in 2016, again, actually pretty solid and up from the year before.
All right. Chris Lowe at FTN Financial, thank you for this.
You're welcome.
There's news that the share of U.S. workers who are in labor unions is the lowest ever measured. Less than 11% were in unions in 2016. This drop comes after several years in which unions had regained some strength, which brings us to Missouri, which will soon be joining other states with so-called right-to-work laws, which further weaken labor unions. St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum reports.
You could say Missouri is a latecomer to right-to-work, since nearly 30 other states have adopted the policy. But here's the newly elected Republican Governor Eric Greitens on why his state should pass it too.
I approach this as somebody who started my own business and worked with veterans, helped them come home to start and successfully run their own businesses. We have to sign right to work. Missouri needs to become a right to work state.
Before we go any further, let's get a little linguistic housekeeping out of the way. Right to work bars unions and employers from requiring workers to pay dues as a condition of employment. Unions charge different amounts for annual dues, but it's generally a few hundred dollars or more. Washington University and St. Louis sociology professor Jake Rosenfeld says with right to work, unions can lose a lot of money and a lot of power.
I think there's a widespread belief that right to work hurts unions, prevents unions from spending money on new organizing. For your average non-union business, the threat of unionization is diminished.
So unions have a choice. Do they fight hard against right to work or adapt? I caught up with Dave Cook, who's with the union that represents workers in the food and grocery industry. He's trying to get a ballot measure before voters in 2018 banning right to work in Missouri.
I think this is very easy to go to Chillicothe, Missouri, or Joplin, Missouri, or wherever, Missouri, and explain that this is more government overreach.
There's no guarantee a ballot initiative will get the necessary signatures or find favor in a state where union membership declined by 60,000 people from 2005 to 2015. So for Clint Zweifel, a former state treasurer and Teamsters official, the best path for unions is to prove to workers that they still matter.
Unions are going to have to remake their own organizations internally, too, in terms of how they serve members, how they conduct business.
If right to work sticks in Missouri, the primary focus for the state's unions could be keeping its members happy enough so they want to pay their dues. In St. Louis, I'm Jason Rosenbaum for Marketplace.
Just under Canada and China on the list of top U.S. trade partners is Mexico, with just over $500 billion worth moving one way or another across the border each year, according to the Census Bureau. This morning, the two countries are at an impasse with a meeting between the U.S. and Mexican presidents canceled after a dispute over who pays for the new wall. First, President Trump's spokesman talked of imposing a 20% border tax on Mexican goods to pay for the wall. But last evening, the president's chief of staff emphasized that the border tax was just one of a, quote, buffet of options available. Earl Anthony Wayne is a longtime diplomat and until a year and a half ago was the U.S. ambassador to Mexico.
While this is a priority for the U.S. administration, this border wall, from Mexico's perspective, it is not a priority. And did it become a very emotional issue with tremendous pressure on Mexico's president, Enrique Peña Nieto, not to show any flexibility, especially on paying for that wall?
The Mexican president has said he, too, is open to discussing some parts of the NAFTA treaty. Do you see next steps with that?
Well, I think the Mexicans are quite open to exploring what could be done to make this treaty a better treaty. And in that discussion, each country can work through their want list.
But they'll have to get talking here. It seems that we're at a moment where people are looking away from each other.
The Mexicans sent their foreign minister and their economic minister to Washington this week thinking that they were going to work through not all the issues, but how we would talk about the issues. And instead, we ended up in this public tweeting back and forth, effectively challenging the president of Mexico either to be willing to pay for the wall or cancel his visit. All of this has been reducing his popularity, his willingness to keep talking, and increasing the popularity of his opponents, including some very populist leftist nationalist candidates.
Earl Anthony Wayne was, until 2015, the U.S. ambassador to Mexico. He's now a public policy fellow at the Woodrow Wilson Center. Ambassador Wayne, thank you.
It's been a great pleasure.
Also, there's word now that the man who, depending on the year, is the richest single person in the world has called a news conference for today. Mexican media tycoon Carlos Slim is expected to address the possibility that the U.S. levies a 20% tax on the border. Candidate Donald Trump had been critical of Mr. Slim, who is also the biggest stockholder in the New York Times Company. However, after the election, both men had what was described as a nice dinner together at Mr. Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida. Again, the Carlos Slim news conference is set for Friday here. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.